Well, good morning, 11 o'clock service. You guys doing good today? Awesome. You look good. You sound good. We're in the presence of God and His people, and it's a great thing to be in His house. And I'm excited to dive into week three of our To Boldly Go series. Before I do, I want to kind of just celebrate something and then kind of talk about it. It's kind of really cool. So over the last 2 weeks, we've had 34 visitors come and check out Kairos Church. 34, which is awesome. 34 VIPs. And from today, I've already seen probably 10 more. So, like, it's just amazing to see what God's doing. If it's your first time, welcome. We're so glad that you're here. Second time coming back, we're glad that you're here. But here's the other thing I want to say to you. Like, I'm so glad that you're here. And I pray that Kairos Church is your home church. But you've come in, and right out the gate, pastor's already talking about money. And you're like, oh, man, that's not how I want to start my year at church. And so I want to talk to you about that just a little bit to my VIPs. Because here's the reality is you've joined at a really exciting time for our church. We've continued to see growth over the last few years, and I'll show you some of that stuff a little bit later. And God is moving us and calling us to what's next. And so it's amazing. And I'll say this to you, maybe, just maybe, God called you here this year in this opportune time because He wants you to be a part of what God's doing here at Kairos. And so that's awesome. And so I would, you know, continue to encourage you to come check us out, to hear what we got going on, the vision for the future. And I also, I'll say this, you know, as we talk about, you know, giving, we talk about, you know, making commitments to this To Boldly Go campaign. If Kairos Church is not your home church yet, like if you don't feel like this is your place, hey, don't feel like you have to do that. We're just sharing with you. And at the end of the day, what I want for you is to find the church that God is calling you to, where He'll call you to serve, where He'll call your family to grow in their faith and to get involved there. And so that's what I want at the end of the day. So I want to encourage you, man, keep coming, keep learning about all that we're doing. And my prayer is that Kairos Church will become your church family. I'm excited to see what God's going to do. Sound good? Awesome. So let's dive back in. Last week, we kicked off diving into a study of the book of Nehemiah. We're going to go back into that. If you want to turn there, if you have your Bible, or if you'd like to follow along in the Bible on your phone, you can do that. We'll be in Nehemiah 2. We'll be looking at verses 11 through 20. Of course, we'll have it on the screen as well for you to follow along. Let me give you a quick recap about what we talked about last week, just in case you missed it. So the whole thing starts with Nehemiah having this deep burden. A family member of his comes back from Jerusalem, gives this negative report about the walls being destroyed and the places in ruin and people are unprotected. And Nehemiah experiences this deep mourning, this deep burden where he feels like God is calling him to go back to where his people, his ancestors were born and where they worship God and do something about the walls of Jerusalem. So the deep burden comes. And then from the deep burden, we talked about how Nehemiah made a bold request. And really, he made three bold requests. First, because he was the cupbearer to the king, he had to ask the king to send him. Hey, send me back to my people, back to my place. I feel burdened for that. Will you send me? And then he was like, cool, you're going to send me? Awesome. Will you also protect me as I make my way there? And then if that's not enough, will you also make provision for me so that when I get there, I can do all that God has called me to do? So there's these bold requests from a cupbearer to the king, and the king grants it, and it's an amazing thing. And then Nehemiah has to make some bold sacrifices. He has to leave the comforts of the palace, of what he's doing, and step into a potentially dangerous situation in order to help rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. All right, we're all up to speed. Now, let's dive into Nehemiah 2, after hearing about what has happened to Jerusalem. So now Nehemiah goes, he's getting reports from other people, but he wants to see it. And so he steps in to Jerusalem, and we'll read right in verse 11, chapter 2. Here's what it says. After I arrived in Jerusalem, and I had been there 3 days, I got up at night and took a few men with me. I didn't tell anyone what God had laid on my heart to do for Jerusalem. The only animal I took was the one I was riding. I went out at night through the valley gate towards the serpent's wall and the dung gate, and I inspected the walls of Jerusalem that had been broken down and its gates had been destroyed by fire. I went on to the fountain gate in the king's pool, but farther down it became too narrow for my animal to go through, so I went up at night by way of the valley and inspected the wall. Then heading back,
I entered through the valley gate and returned. The officials did not know where I had gone or what I was doing, for I had not yet told the Jews, the priests, the nobles, the officials, or the rest of those who would be doing the work. And so what we see initially is Nehemiah, he's inspecting what's taking place. He's gathering information. He's looking at the damage. He's seeing what needs to be done. And he says, I haven't really told anybody. I'm here, but I haven't shared what God's laid on my heart. They don't know why I'm here. Before I talk to them and share with them, I want to inspect it, and I want to get in a plan. I want to have information so that I can begin to share and so that we can plan for what God is going to do in Jerusalem. And so that's what takes place. He gathers information before he kind of shares his plan or goes after it and makes this move. I want to ask you guys something. Where are my impulsive people? Like, you don't think, you just go after it. Like, something's going to happen, you're going to go after it. Not a single person? I got people pointing at other people, and so maybe there's a self-awareness that might need to happen. You're impulsive. And if you took time to raise your hand, maybe you're not impulsive. You're like, I'm thinking through this. Why is he going to bring me up on stage? What is he going to add? Like, what's he going to do? So maybe you're not. Maybe you're not. Okay. So like with impulsive people, that's, you know, we kind of look at something, we feel something, we just go after it. We don't really ask a bunch of questions. We're just like, let's jump and see what happens, right? Where are my planners, my analyzers? The rest of y'all should raise your hand. You can't be like neither. I'm like, no, I'm nothing. I'm just neutral. I'm just here. You know, I'm going to do my thing, and I'm not going to do nothing. Okay, with our planners, with our analyst, we ask a lot of questions. We gather a lot of information, and we really, really, really take our time before stepping into it. And no judgment either way. Like, I think we need both. It's important that we have both. And if you're someone and you're like, I'm impulsive, and then you see someone next to you that says, I'm not, y'all need to get together and balance each other out. Like, that's the reality of it. Me and my wife are both impulsive people. It's not good. #9kids. Okay, so so at the end of the day, I am. I can be an impulsive person. I do enjoy change. I like taking risks. But I don't go into things completely blind. I will look at my past experiences. I'll look at and learn from other people's past experiences. I'll gather information. I'll look at the pertinent, what information do I absolutely need to know? But I am like an extreme optimist. And so I could look and gather all the information, and it could be like, the writing's on the wall. This isn't going to go well. I'd be like, that's all right. I believe I can do it. And I'm just like, let's go. And so that's where kind of like, I'll get it, but I'm still going to go after it. Again, that's how I've come to have 9 kids. And some of y'all may not know, like, it's, we have 9 kids, but foster and adoption, it's all not just ours. Anyway, that's a whole nother another time. Maybe we'll talk about that in February. Okay. This is also how I got into ministry. You know, God, you know, he gave me an opportunity to serve and begin to working in the local church. I already had a great job. And, you know, I'm looking at the information, and other people are giving me information, and I'm just like, I know it seems like a step back financially, career-wise. I'm going to work for a church plant. They meet out of a YMCA, and it's just like red flag. And I'm like, let's do it. And we went for it, right? And I entered into ministry. And the same thing when I became a youth pastor. It was one of those things. I felt that call. And I'm just like, man, I've never felt this before. I feel like this is where God is calling me. I went to my pastor, and I'm like, hey, I feel like God's calling me to be the youth pastor. And he's like, well, what about your other jobs? And I'm like, I'll do those too. Let's go. And so jumped in. Best decision of my life. Loved being a youth pastor. Did that for 6 years. Same thing. Stepping out to plant a church. Oh, my goodness. The amount of like information that I gathered just from being in a church plant, I was like, nah, I am never doing that. That is way too much. And God's like, joke's on you, buddy. And in the moment, like, it was one of those things. Like, I felt it, and I'm like, this is what I feel God is calling me to do. This, I tell people this sometimes. Like, we went through church planter assessment, and they had a psychiatrist there. And I kid you not, one of the first questions, she goes, so you got 5 kids? Yeah. And you want to be a church planter? Yeah. She goes, are you crazy? I go, yeah. I go, is that a problem? She's like, no, I was just curious. I was like, okay, cool. Let's do this thing. And so, like, you know, oftentimes, the risk and the potential for failure or problems, they were high. Man, but the calling and the faith in God, it outweighed it all. And so I want to give this to you. For whatever, you know, is going on in your life, our faith in God helps us move forward or step out or to go despite the risk or despite the potential for failure. If he's calling us to it, he will work it out. If it's his will for our life, man, he will do something amazing. So I wanted to give that to you. Now, gaining information, it's good. You want to gain information. Now, I don't know about you, but sometimes when I gain the information, it will build confidence. I'm like, okay, I thought this, and now I have the information that says, yes, what you thought is true. But then there are other times when I reach out and I find information, and I'm like, oh my goodness, I hadn't even thought about that. And so in one sense, the information gives me confidence. And in another sense, the information leads to doubt, fear, worry, anxiety. So as we began to like step into buying property and getting our own space, I just had to make a lot of phone calls. The initial phone call is, can we secure a loan in order to buy property? And so I had to give all of our information. I got on this phone call with a guy named Kirk. He's from a place called Wesleyan Investment Fund, and I connected with him at a conference last year, and I just began to tell him, like, here's what we're doing, here's what we're thinking. I'm giving him all the data, all the cost, all the stuff, and then he starts spitting stuff at me. I'm just like, I'm writing it all down as fast as I can. I'm like, man, I didn't think about that. I didn't think about that. I didn't realize that was that expensive, right? And so I'm getting all the data. I'm getting all the numbers. He's telling me some of the things that, you know, are happening. And I'm like, well, good talk. Never mind. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was great. But this information, I thought it was going to go the other way. But no, but in the same conversation, he says, listen, I know there's a lot. We love to give everyone all. We want you to understand what you're stepping into. He said, but we've analyzed what you've sent us. We've seen where your church is at. We've looked at your trends. We've looked at your projections. And I want to tell you, because of all that, because of your financial standing, because of year over year giving, because of the size of your church, like, we can see from other churches that we help that you guys are heading in the right direction. I'm like, yes. So what did I get? Doubt and confidence. I'm like, okay, I like that. And so then, you know, we just start talking about, you know, purchasing this property, getting this loan. And then he's like, well, what, you know, so you buy this property. Well, then what are you going to do? Like, what's your plan to build? And then he starts sharing all of that information with me. Again, just information overload. And he's like, well, here's what you'll need to do. And here's where you'll need to be. And you'll have this loan. And then you need to get this other loan. And your giving trends need to be here. And then when you get there, you need to determine, is it a property that you're going to find a building and you're going to renovate? Or are you going to want to build yourself? Because the money changes substantially. And I'm like, you know your stuff, buddy. Thanks for sharing all that with me. And it's just, like Nehemiah, I begin to inspect. And I see some of the issues. I see some of the problems. I'm seeing all of this data, and I have confidence, and I have doubt. And so that's what Nehemiah did. He inspected, and he gathered information, and then he went to work. What I want to do, I want to give you guys some information. You guys cool if I give you some information? Like, I got a lot of this, and can I just bleh on you? Like, I want you guys to have some of it too, and so you can continue to join us in praying over all of this and your commitment to what we're doing next. The first thing I want to show you is our giving trends and projections. So I went back to 2020. So if you know this about our church, we launched in 2017, but when COVID happened, we had to kind of relaunch, okay? And so 2020 is as far as I went back. And so you can see in 2020 where giving is at. And then we had a large jump in 2021. And then just a little small little guy jump in 2022. And then you begin to see a trend, about a $90,000, $100,000 jump year over year. And so this is annual giving, by the way. This isn't what we bring in per month, because if we did, we wouldn't be here. Okay, we would already done secured a place. But so you begin to see the trends. And so then from those trends, I began to project out, okay, if this is what we're seeing, then we can say, you know, year over year, we could see 100,000 year over year. So 2025, it'd be 580, 2026, it'd be 680, so on and so forth. Okay, you got that information in your head? Cool. I'm going to talk about it again in just a minute, but I wanted you to have it. Now, let's look at our attendance trends and projections as well. Yeah, go to the next one for me. Boom, boom, boom. There it is. Okay, so I did not go back to 2020. So we were going to start at 2021, okay? 2020 was discouraging. Okay, here we go. When at the end of 2019, our church had just broke a 300 attendance barrier. And then COVID came, and then we got back to what we were doing, and we went from 300 to 30 and had to start over. That's why I say that. Okay, so 2021, you see the trend. So we start at 141, and then we go to 233. We had a second service. We go to 312. We go to 335. And you begin to see, like, this gradual uptick. And so we kind of took that and said, okay, our projection may be, you know, a 40,000 to 30,000, maybe 50,000 uptick in attendance year over year. And so we go 370, 410, 440, 470. These are our trends. And you're like, why is he giving us all this information? Because I have it. I don't want you to have it, okay? So here's what I want to tell you. Our annual giving, let me see, did I tell you? No, I didn't tell you this. So the first thing that that I was asked when trying to secure a loan is this. What is your annual giving, and what is your average attendance? We want to know that right now. And then we need you to send us the last 3 years of attendance and giving. And so what they're doing is they're saying, okay, can you afford a loan now? And from your trends, are you an up and to the right? Are you kind of flat and plateaued? Or are you declining? Because if they see declining trends, they're going to be like, thanks, but no thing. You know what I'm saying? So they're analyzing this from their perspective. And so our annual giving was $490,000. So almost $500,000. And kudos to you guys. Good job, church. I think that's amazing. I look at that and I go, oh my gosh, this is wild. Like, this is crazy. And so we have $500,000. And so what I came to learn is that with that amount, we are able to secure a loan up to $1.1 million. And then the guy that I was talking to began to tell me, so he's like, here's what you need to look at. So we're looking at now, but we know you're building in the future. And so right now, at 335 average attendance, that means your giving per person is $1,400. And that is allowing you to secure this loan for $1.2 million. And he's saying, if you want to build, not in 10 or 15 years, if you want to build in the next 3 to 5 years, and then let's say by 2028, what would need to happen for our church is that our giving per person would have to raise to 1,800, and we would have to have, on average, 500 people attending our church. And that's in order for us to begin to secure a loan to build on a property. What am I telling you? Basically, our attendance has to go up, and our giving has to go up. Let me show you something else. If our giving trends stay the same versus if our giving trends grow. And so I just shared with you what we need to be, right? I said about 1,800 and 500 people. And so if our giving trends stay the same, with the kind of projections of our attendance right there, so the 370, 410, 440, 470, that's our attendance trends. And if we have $1,400 per person, that is what we'll get. And I said, what will we need? We need about 800,000. If it stays the same, even with attendance trends, we're not there. And it'll take probably, let's see, 3, 4, maybe by 2032. That's a weird thing to say, 2032. Ugh. Anyway, sorry, this is a little squirrel there. And so you see that. And so now if we look and we say, okay, we have increased giving trends, we'll stay at the same attendance, but if our giving per person goes up, then we see we're at 580, 680, 780, 880, and that hits us where we've seen our trends going up 100,000 per year, and we're getting closer to, right, 800,000 and 500 people in attendance. So I want to give you this because I'm looking at all this, and I'm gathering all this information, and I'm going, okay, this is a lot. And I said that in the beginning, like, this is bold. This is a lot. This isn't anything that our church has ever done before, and it's a big ask. And you know what? The other thing I said to you guys is that, you know, we're talking about making a commitment, an offering commitment over the next 3 years to raise this money for our property. But I said even more important than the commitment is the obedience to the tithe, because what I said, what they ask, what is your year over year giving? What are you bringing in annually? And all of that is dependent upon the tithe. And so the tithe is so important because it is a consistent barometer of our financial standing that will allow us to secure loans in order for us to go where God is calling us to go. And if we desire to go where God is leading, then we have to be willing to grow where we are. And so if attendance trends continue, here's what I also want to tell you. We're going to face capacity issues in our current space. So that's the other reason why we're entering into this. We're already beginning to see some capacity issues in this building. There are some things we can do to help that. But some of the big issues are our kids' ministry. You know, when you start getting into 50 and 60 kids per service, how many kids' ministry workers are in here? Raise your hand. How many of you love when you have 20 plus kids in a class? And you're like, this is the best. I love what I'm doing. And not that we don't love your kids. And if you've never experienced it, sign up to serve in kids' ministry. And you go experience it back there. It's a lot. And so we want to make sure that our kids' ministry isn't just about corralling chaos. We want to teach them about Christ. We want to be able to individually to care for them and talk with them and invest in them. And the more kids we have, the harder it is to do. And so we have kids' capacity. We have a seating capacity issue. Well, first and foremost, we don't have any other seats. What you see is what we have out. Last week, I was telling people that. I like to sit up on that camera box back there and watch y'all, okay? It's creepy. I know. I'm sorry. But I'll sit up there, you know, before I come up here, and I'll see some people come in a little bit late. Sometimes they're VIPs. And when you guys are standing and worshiping, and this room looks like it is now, it is really hard to see if there are any free available seats. And you get uncomfortable and go, you know what? This church might be too big. Maybe we don't need to be here. And they ask, I didn't do this a lot. And has anyone come in and ever experienced that before in this church or in another church where you walked in and you're like, I don't know, this is weird. And I've watched some of y'all did this last week, and you're like, I just don't want to raise my hand because I don't want the pastor to point at me. But it happens, and you may not be like, well, that's the thing that's going to turn me away. But you look at it. It's just human nature for us to go, well, there's not really enough room. And there is. Like, we could look right now and be like, there's seats. But we look at it and go, well, it's too full, and so there's a seating capacity. And then we just think about, so right now, you know, we're averaging 335. Add 100 people to that, 435 people. You know, thinking about what that means for kids, thinking about what that means for here, think about what that means for you waiting in line to get your coffee and donuts, you know what I'm saying? And you're like, this is something, like, someone needs to do something about this, okay? I've been standing in this line for 10 minutes. I know Echo Coffee's about to close because I showed up a little bit late, and I'm tired of that, you know? So some of you are like, whoa. And there's capacity issues, and we love this space, and we've continued to grow in this space, but we're seeing that we can't stay here. And so, one of the options is add another service. And anytime I mention that to my staff, they're like, no, Pastor Brent, what you're hearing from God is wrong. I'm like, no, I mean, like, it's one of those things, you say a third service, and you're just thinking about it. You're like, okay. When are they doing that? Is it like a 7 a.m. service? Blech, right? No. Is it Saturday night? Is it Sunday? And you begin to think about all these things, but that's the reality. Let me show you some of these numbers. Because again, you think about capacity in here, you think about seating capacity, and then really you think about kids. And so, like, if we break it down, you see 2024, that's what we did last year, and then you get to 2025 and you times that by two. The other thing I want to tell you is that our services aren't split right down the middle. One tends to be more attended than the other. And so where I say there's, you know, 40 kids between the two services, it's probably more like 60-30. It could push into like 65-20. Like it gets crazy. If you've been in the kids ministry, you know, I just walk by and go, man, I don't want to be them right now. You know what I'm saying? But it gets crazy. And so you look at that and you look at those numbers go. And, you know, for my kids ministry workers, you know, you begin to think right now we're at 30 kids per service. What does that look like when we're at 50 kids a service to each class? And so we go, okay, at 2026, it may be the time, or maybe before this, that we need to begin to split down to three services. And then you get back down into more manageable numbers for kids ministry. But if we continue our growth patterns, you begin to see, even in 2028, we're getting back to those numbers per service. And so I'm giving you all this just to show you. Man, I've gathered the information. I've looked at these things. We're seeing the writing on the wall. And what we are asking, what we are collectively doing is trying to, I'm asking you to expand your capacity, expand our capacity in attendance, in serving, and in giving. Do you want to know how you can expand your capacity? In any manner, any walk of life, you want to know how you expand your capacity? You got to leave your comforts. You got to be willing to leave what's comfortable. You've got to be willing to sacrifice. Again, we talked about this last week. This is what Nehemiah did. He left his comforts. He left where he was at. It was a good role being the cupbearer. And in his willingness to say yes, to obediently go, to make bold sacrifices, Nehemiah goes from being a cupbearer for the king of another nation to being the governor of Jerusalem. And that's in Nehemiah 5:14. And so he becomes a governor, and what did he do? He expanded his capacity. I was thinking about this in my life. When we were younger, when we were a smaller family, we had two kids, and within like a 2-month time period, we went from two kids to five kids under the age of five. Listen, I don't care who you are. I don't care how many books. I don't care if you went to school for parenting. Nothing prepares you for five kids under the age of five, okay? It's one of those things, and so you look at it and you go, man, two is hard, okay? My son Seth, man, he was something when he was little. He's amazing now. And I was waiting for some of the siblings to laugh about that. But, you know, if you have two kids and you've gone to three kids, it's a different ballpark, man. Think about going from two to five. And you talk about your capacity being expanded. There were no comforts anymore with five kids under five. And I'm mostly speaking from my wife's point of view because I just kissed her and went to work and said, I'll be back at five, you know? And so expand your capacity. And then, okay, God's like, you expanded your capacity to five. Now it's time to expand your capacity to eight and nine. And we're like, dude, if we can do five, bring it. We survived that, you know? And God expanded our capacity. Step out to plant Kairos. He had to expand my capacity as a husband, as a father, as a pastor, all of those things. And as we looked at this through our church, like we've had to expand our capacity in many different times where we'd have to make changes, make sacrifices, go from two services to one service, change locations on multiple times. And every time we did, you know what it required? It required more time, more commitment, and more sacrifices. But every time, it allowed us to continue to do what we were doing and allowed us to do it in the way that we've always dreamed and done it, and we did it for more people. And that's what we're looking to doing. And so we do have this problem, this capacity issue. The writing's on the wall for three services. I'm not going to say rapidly, don't worry. I'm not going to put it past God. It could happen this year, y'all. Get ready. I don't know. We've had upwards of 50 VIPs in 3 weeks, so... You know, if that trend keeps going, let's go. Get ready to, you know, stand in the back and give your seat up. Okay. But there's this capacity thing. And so we're just going to have to keep thinking about that and looking on that and preparing for that. And that's what this year's about, right? I said we're going to gather, we're going to build so that we can prepare for what God is doing. Lots of info, right? Lots of info. Do you feel more confident? Do you feel more doubtful? Again, it's... Some of you are like, I'm not going to say I feel doubtful. No, I'm confident about this. Let's go, Jesus. Right? You know? But then you're like inside, you're like, yeah, this is crazy. Right? And so and I think that's the thing. Like, you get the confidence and you get the doubt. And as I think about and I gain information about the thing that God has called me to do, I get confidence and I get doubt. But as I learn more about God, right, I gain more confidence in who he is, in what he's done, and that if he's called me to it, he'll see me through it. And so the reality of it is this: when we're gaining knowledge and we're gaining information, it will bring confidence, it will bring doubt, and the equalizer of those things is faith in God, believing that he can. Where we say we can't, he can. Where we couldn't, he did. Where we're lacking, he is abundant and he provides. And so we inspect and we gather information, and sometimes doubt comes, and if doubt is coming, then we got to respond to it by faith in who God is. Now, real quickly, I want to talk about one more thing that shows up in this story. You know, as Nehemiah steps out to do this thing, he faces criticism and skepticism. Let me read this to you, Nehemiah 2:17-19. And so he says, come, let's rebuild Jerusalem's wall. After he does the inspecting, they get a plan. He told them how gracious hand of God had been on him and what the king had said to him. And then they said, well, let's start rebuilding, right? He gave them the information, told them the plan, and they were encouraged to do this work. And then verse 19 comes in. And you get these guys, Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem. These are horrible people, okay? And they heard this, and what did they do? They mocked and despised Nehemiah and the Israelites, and they said, you know, they're laughing. What is this you're doing? This is foolishness. This isn't going to work. And they begin to, you know, kind of threaten them. Are you rebelling against the king? Meanwhile, Nehemiah has letters from the king, and so they come at them. And you know this. You've probably experienced this. When you step out in faith to do what you feel God has called you to do, right on the tail end of that is the attacks from the enemy. Because he doesn't want you to step out. He doesn't want you to have the faith that God will do what he's called you to do. And so these attacks, they come from a spiritual place, from Satan, from our adversary. And then these attacks come from other people, whether it's emotional or physical or verbal, whatever it may be, we feel attacked. Now, I don't know this. I've done ministry long enough. I've been through a building campaign. And I've been in ministry. And I have my suspicions that there may be a handful of people who've heard about what we're trying to do, it's tempting to step into, and have become skeptical and critical. Or at the very least, the talks about giving and just the church talking about money again has given them a negative thinking or pessimistic pattern in their life, and they begin to push back and put up barriers. Danny, you can go ahead and make your way up to the stage as I close out. Let me ask you this, church. As a church, do you desire for us to grow? Yes? Maybe? I don't know, because if it's only half of us, I don't know. But let's say we do. Let's say as a church, we're like, yeah, we want to grow. I mean, we healthy things grow, and that's what we want to see. And so if that's the case, and we want to grow, the next question becomes, is as we grow, do you have a desire to go and do what it takes to enter into a new space? It will require much of all of us. And I'm giving you more info. I want you to have the info. I know there might be doubt that comes with it, but I also want you to gain some confidence. And I'm also hoping that as I give all this information to you, you'll take all the information and you'll bring God into the equation. You see, because the data, the numbers, the facts, they're all great. But at the end of the day, what we're stepping into, we have to step into in faith, believing that God can do the impossible. And we can conservatively or realistically look at the numbers and go, nope, it's not going to happen. But when you take those numbers and you add God to the equation, anything is possible. Anything. That's true for our church. That's true for your marriage. That's true for your kids. Whatever God's calling you to. It may not look possible, may not seem possible, but if God is behind it, it is possible. You know, at the end of the day, you know, in all the things that we're looking to do, I don't want to look back and go, man, look at what we accomplished. No, I want to look back and go, man, there is no way we could have ever done that on our own. Look what God did. Look at how God showed up. Look at how God provided. This is a bold journey that we're entering into together. And it will absolutely require God's involvement for it to happen. Because if it doesn't, then what are we doing? We're just relying on us, our wisdom, our provision. But man, I don't think that's what this is about. What God is trying to teach us, what he's trying to do, is he's trying to expand and grow our faith. He wants us to put all of our hope in him and who he is and what he's going to do next. And so we lean on him. This is something that only God can accomplish, and we are joining him in that mission. And I think the same is true of whatever bold step God is calling you to take. Maybe it's with your finances. Maybe it's a job opportunity. Maybe it's to start a business. Maybe you're considering having a baby or having another baby or to foster, to adopt. Maybe it's a career or college path, financial investments, to get married, to move out, to buy your own house, to buy your own car, to go back to school. I don't know, whatever it is. As you take that bold step, guess what? Will there be trouble? Yeah. Will there be doubt, fear, anxiety, worry? Yeah. Will there be critics? Skeptics? Haters? Naysayers? Yeah. And while you can just about always count on those things to show up, even more, you can count on the gracious hand of God to show up, guide you, and provide you to what he's called you to. So here's what I'll say. We got to, where we can't, where we think we can't, where we don't believe that we can, believe that God can. In Nehemiah 2:20 is what it says. I shared it last week. It is the God of heaven who will grant us success. And so we believe that. And as we begin to believe that, as we take that knowledge and add it to our confidence in doubt, we will start building. We will say yes to the job opportunity. We will sign the deal on the home. We will ask for her hand in marriage. We will move out on our own. We will go back to school. We will become foster parents. We will have another child. We will lead a crew at Kairos. Whatever it may be, we'll step out. If that's what God's calling you to, is place and put that burden on your life. Man, believe that he's in it, and he's going to see you through to the end. And we're believing that as a church, as we step into the future, looking at all the data, inspecting all the things, and believing that God is right in the midst of all that he's calling us to do, and he's going to do something great. And we're asking you to join this bold faith journey with us. I'm asking that you guys would stand to your feet. Bow your heads, close your eyes. I want to pray out, and I just want to kind of give you some questions to think about as we close out our time today. And the first thing, kind of going back to, you know, whether you're impulsive or whether you're an analyzer and a planner, the first thing I would say to you is this: in your life, as you think about whatever God's calling you to, whatever step he is asking you to take in his life to grow in your faith, what do you need to inspect before you move? What information do you need to gather? Because maybe, just maybe, God wants you to have a little bit more information before you step into what he's calling you to do. Gather it. Get it. Do the work. Put in the time. And make sure you're being discerning. Bring in wise counsel. And that's the other thing. And as you do that, maybe you have done that. Maybe you've overdone that. What info have you gained about what God's calling you to do that has led to fear, doubt, worry, and anxiety? And I would say today, if there's something that God's calling you to and your response has been fear, worry, doubt, anxiety, I would say just lay it at his feet. Let faith in him be the equalizer. Look at what he's done in your life and the lives of others. Look at his word and see how he wants to move in your life. I think the other thing as we step out is there will be attacks, there will be trouble, there will be skeptics, there will be critics. And so maybe today you have people speaking into your life. Maybe someone has spoke something wise over you and you've chose to ignore it. I would say heed wise counsel. If they've done it, if they've gone through it, they probably know what they're talking about. Don't just shrug it off. And at the same time, make sure you're discerning about the voices that are coming at you that you need to shut down and shut up. God wants to do something in your life. God may be calling you to something. God may say, hey, step out on faith. I want to show you something. Today, I would pray that you would say yes. Say yes and see what he does. God, today we thank you for your word. We thank you for the encouragement that we see through Nehemiah. He dealt with so much, but we're encouraged by it, God. You're calling us as a church collectively to expand our capacity. God, and I'm praying that we're able to do it. I'm praying that we'll make bold moves, bold risk, and continue to believe that you are the one that will grant us success. It's in your son's name that I pray. Amen.